I looks like we don't have a lot of people currently joining the meeting today. I know I had a few say they weren't able to make it. I guess this time wasn't good for others. But we're past the beginning, so let's go ahead and get started. Since we'll be recording this, those who aren't present can review it later. All right. So I also do want to emphasize that this again is a public meeting. We will be posting a recording of this on the site, so just let that be. Okay, so our agenda for the day. First, I want to talk a little bit about improving communication. We realized through the last advisor meeting and through getting prepared for this one that there's a lot of inefficiencies in what we're doing. We would like to get better at that. We have some ideas we want to throw out at you. In addition to that, we want to talk about two of our scenarios and what we've done so far with them, go a little deeper, a little more in depth, specifically with long-term storage and ad hoc querying exploration. And then, of course, we want to open up some time to discuss and collect feedback from you. First of all, though, before we dive into the agenda, I want to talk about the feedback we had from the last meeting with you guys. And some of the changes we've made with respect to that. One message we heard loud and clear was that this needs to be cross-platform. There was a lot of concerns that we were focusing too much on just .NET. So we're doing some reorganization of the assets in the project to emphasize other platforms. We already have invested some in Java, in particular with Storm. We want to make a space in the project for community contributions as well. If someone wants to say, for example, implement something that we've done in Node.js, or another platform, we want to have a place in the project where they can intuitively place that implementation. Another important feedback note that we got is we used some unfortunate language in our last meeting. When we talked about some important topics like command and control, we described it as being out of scope, and that was really the wrong way to talk about it. What we really mean to say is that it's on the backlog. It may not be the thing we're doing right now, but we recognize it as important and we want to get to it. And we're trying to track everything now on our backlog that's like that. In addition, for the final feedback element we had was to emphasize security. Which was always part of our plan, but we have not emphasized it enough. So we want to be more deliberate about emphasizing security as a guidance topic in itself. We went ahead and added a security persona to the introduction to the journey document. And we're trying to be more deliberate about incorporating that into what we're doing. The brief outline of our plan for that is that we're currently working on an introduction to security, which is really a document about general awareness of security and safety-related issues when building IoT solutions. In addition to that, we also want to have a security component for each one of the scenarios that we're writing about. Our plan with that is to involve specialists, or people who are focusing on those questions, for each scenario and have them do a review of the scenario and then incorporate the content from them into that. So that's it with respect to feedback. Let me move on to this improving communication topic. So this is a meta topic, but we realize we've had some problems here that we have a global audience. We're trying to find times for everyone to show up. It looks like this time was worse because we have very few, external community members joining today. We also realize that really every other week is in some sense too infrequent. We're going through a lot of stuff. We have a hard time like compiling that all for the 1 hour meeting every other week. We want to find a better cadence for getting information out to you guys. And we also recognize, or we feel at least, that this is not the best form for getting feedback from you. Not everybody's comfortable talking on calls. And again, the time zone issues are difficult there. So one of the proposals that we have, or some proposals that we have, is to make this something where you can do it at your leisure on your own schedule. We are going to explore recording status updates and just posting them so that you can watch them at your will. We would also record demos and walkthroughs of important topics as needed ad hoc. And we're also wanting to do feedback via a forum. So the idea is you could go, you could watch something, we'll publish it, you could subscribe to a channel, and then you could go immediately and engage in a conversation with us and other advisors in a feedback channel such as a forum. We're trying to learn from what other teams inside Microsoft are doing. If any of you are following the ASP.NET vNext team, they're doing these community stand-ups, and I'm looking closely at that model. I think that may be a viable model for us to use as well. So I want to put that out there. I would love for you guys to think about that, consider it. I want to know if that would work better for you delivering feedback to us. I want to prevent, I don't want people to have to wake up at 3 a.m. in the morning to call in to these calls just to give us feedback on what we're doing.
Hey, Christopher?
Yes.
This is Spiros. So one of the things that I think you could use to a much greater extent is the issues tracker on GitHub, right? I mean, a lot of, to the degree that you are looking for community feedback and you're looking for suggestions, recommendations, and so on, you know, that's exactly what issues trackers are used for in open source projects. It's not for everything, but certainly if someone was feeling that you needed more attention to security or whatever, that would be a place to put it. Just put an issue in the issues tracker that says, feel like, you need a module on security, or you're missing a discussion of lawn sprinklers or whatever.
Yeah, I
because would then it becomes an issue which people can comment on. It becomes an issue that you can, say, you can close it saying, you're way out of line, you're way out of scope, or this is interesting, we're going to consider it in version 2 or version 17 or whatever. It becomes a way to actually, engage that conversation without having either an external thing like a community forum, or without people feeling like you're being sort of pedagogical and saying this is how it's done.
I agree. One of the problems we've had so far is that we have the issue tracker up there. We've been putting some conversations in place, and we're not seeing much activity there. So I'm trying to find ways to meet people where they're at. And we also were hoping the persistent chat, the Gitter chat room, would be a good channel as well because of its integration with GitHub issues, right? We would love that, but we feel like that people aren't naturally gravitating toward that.
And I'll just add, this is Matt. I'll just add, we are, pretty much everything that we're doing within the project already uses the issue trackers extensively. I think that what you're leaning toward is more of suggesting using the issue tracker for feedback. Now, community members can already make feedback on any of the issues we already have open, but I think adding feedback, through opening new issues is accepted.
So Dennis had an interesting idea, which is recording our discussions when we start coming up with new ideas.
Yeah, so to the point that Dennis raised in chat, one of the things we've been trying to do, and we haven't been very good about it, is we've been trying to actually have discussions on the issues about certain topics. So rather than have those discussions just in the team room, we've tried to raise questions as issues, and then have team members go back and forth there with their different perspectives, and also engage community. And we've had, I think, two advisors so far participate in discussions on issues. One of the problems that I foresee that I would love a solution for is the ability to. I think people are going to have a hard time going, hey, what has changed since the last time I was here? Right, really like what's new? Because I don't think we can expect advisors to be continuously monitoring our repo every day. So that's why I would like to do some sort of a checkpoint that they can go to that's not a call they have to dial into at a specific time, but something they can go to on their own terms and say, okay, what's the big picture of what's been going on with this project? in the last week or 2 weeks. But I guess to reemphasize your point, Spiros, is that we would love for people to engage us via issues, adding their own issues, and participating in conversations in the issue tracker. Any other thoughts on this before we move on?
Hey guys, this is Olivier. Just a comment about the use of the issues, actually, and you were mentioning the need for a solution to for people to know what's new. Well, if you actually use GitHub with commits and so on, you can actually track the changes. And when you come, you can list the latest commits and say, hey, I was at that point. There's been three commits. If the commits are labeled correctly, you can actually have a great idea of what the changes are about and then go to the files that have been modified directly.
True. But our concern with that is that we're putting too much responsibility on our advisors. We want to make it easy for them to know what we're thinking and what we're doing and to understand the reasoning so that they can, you know, spend their time not necessarily navigating Git or GitHub, which we're all comfortable with, but we don't want to assume that our advisors are. And we want them to focus on, you know, what we're thinking about and whether or not it's the right thing to be thinking about. So I agree with you that can be done. I'm just not sure that that's something we should ask external advisors to be doing.
Right. They can do that anytime they want. It's just about, are we going to make it easier for them or not? I would like to make things a little bit easier and be a little more explicit about what we'd like our advisors to know and what we would want to know from them.
I want to address what Dennis is writing to in the chat. He said, it would be interesting to know what reasons led you to such decisions. We actually want to explicitly include that in the written docs. So already in the journal entries around long-term cold storage, we want to capture everything that led us to a certain decision. We want to compare and contrast the different alternatives that we looked at and then say, we chose this, or we would choose this given a certain set of conditions, or we might choose the other alternative with different conditions.
I was about to say, so right, taking it down, what would be really good, Dennis and others, is to actually look at our journey entry and give us feedback on that specifically. We publish those, right?
No, they're all public.
So okay. those would be good touching points?
Correct. Is what we're saying reasonable right now, or do you guys feel that we're heading in the wrong direction?
They totally agree with us.
Speak now or forever hold your peace.
No, not true. You don't have to hold your peace. Continued feedback is welcome. Okay, I'm going to move on, but if you have more thoughts on this, please feel free to share them.
Yeah, I mean just to quickly agree, right? I mean, I think that anything that's getting more external input is great. And, you know, try many different ways, see which takes off.
Okay.
But I think the thing that will make the output have, you know, have interest and get adoption or get however you're going to measure the success, right, is going to be that it's not a Microsoft diatribe about this is how we do IoT and this is what we think IoT is, but rather it's a it's a compilation of what IoT problems are that people are dealing with and what solutions we can bring to bear for those.
Yes, agreed. I agree. That's very much the message we want to portray. That this is, we want to listen to you, listen to the community, understand what problems you're facing, and help you tackle those problems in a way that will ultimately lead to your long-term success.
All right.
Okay, so we're 20 minutes in. Let me move on to some of the scenarios. The two scenarios that we want to talk about today both deal with storage. I want to kind of establish a baseline about some of our learnings just about storage in general. So actually, let me first share my desktop. give it a second to connect. So what I'm going to show here is the logical architecture that we currently have checked into our repo. This is part of the introduction, introducing the journey document. This is what Fabricam's logical architecture looks like. And I think there's already some revisions we need to make to this. But at a very high level, what we're talking about, right, is devices sending stuff to some sort of cloud gateway, that cloud gateway going to some sort of event processing engine. From there, taking results at event processing, putting it into storage. The two scenarios I want to talk about today really are when we have long-term storage and when we have the need to explore raw data, and I say raw in air quotes. So we have kind of made an assumption, and we actually explained these assumptions in the documents we're writing, but for the context of today's meeting, we've made the assumption that we are using Event Hub as the ingestion service, and that we're now downstream from an Event Hub processing the events that have gone in through an Event Hub. So I just wanted to bring that up as some context for what we're talking about. Now I will switch back to my slide deck. Actually, let me do this. Let me just see.
I'm on a cell phone, so I can't see what you're presenting. I suspect it's similar to one of those architecture diagrams in your What is IoT document.
Yes, it is. It was the diagram that is present in our GitHub repo in the Introducing the Journey.
And you know that diagram in its basic form has been around Microsoft for about a year. And the feedback that I've gotten from customers about it is relatively good, except that every customer I've talked to wants to discuss also the role of local processing. And the way you've got that diagram, essentially it's a all processing, all thinking gets done in the cloud, which is just not the way that any of our IoT customers have actually talked about it, or not many of our IoT customers have talked about it. You know, they want to be able to determine amongst a group of sensors, some activity without necessarily sending it to the cloud, or they want, in that case, the field gateway to have some intelligence before sending things to the cloud, so that there's a local feedback loop as well. And that diagram seems to preclude that there is any local processing, which I think is will cut us out of a number of discussions.
That's a good point, and I've actually heard that same point from other sources as well. And I think what we need to do as an action item on our side is to capture that scenario and add that to our backlog as something we need to address. Part of what we were saying with that diagram too was not that it was an ultimate comprehensive diagram, but rather it was a diagram that represented the logical architecture for what Fabricam was trying to do in their first few months of having a system up. But that doesn't negate what you're saying. The role of local processing of data before you get to the cloud is important. Now shifting gears, I guess, back to the two scenarios I want to talk about. One of the things we realize is that when it comes to storage of events after they have been processed, and really we're talking about the raw event stream here, we found that there's a lot of characteristics, number of characteristics to consider with a storage technology that really are driven by what you want to do with the data. So let me go over these quickly. One is cost of persistence. And what I really mean there is, what is the overall cost to keep my storage around, right? We have the cost to access, which how expensive is it, both in money and in time or effort, to get data out of my system? Queryability, how easy is it to formulate a query to look, you know, to find what I want as opposed to something that's just key value pair? Durability, capacity, and throughput. So every storage technology that we look at has different set of characteristics that apply here, right? So we're looking at blobs because they have very inexpensive cost of persistence. Not necessarily a high cost of access, but queryability is low, right? It's just I get a blob and then I have to unpack that blob. Durability is high, capacity is high. But you take something like Redis, right? And Redis is not durable at all, has a really high throughput though. So, and Elasticsearch and SQL, and then there's others that aren't even on this list. So one of the, I want to just set that as a little bit of the stage before we talk about the scenarios, because these characteristics drive some of the technology choices that we're making. I also want to talk briefly about some of the language that we are using. And we're still a little bit unsettled with this language ourselves, but it's sprinkled all throughout our writing. We're trying to consolidate it and clear it up. But we talk about cold, warm, and hot storage. And one of the learnings I personally had was these labels can be applied to storage technologies, but they might also be applied to analysis techniques or even just scenarios, and they have slightly different meanings in different contexts. But when we talk about cold storage, and I also actually want to point out they're all relative terms to each other. Cold storage tends to be things that are cheaper. It tends to be something that's easy to get data into. It tends to have a higher capacity than other types of storage. And the data that is in cold storage tends to be older data and also has high durability. Relatively speaking, warm tends to be easier to query, easier to retrieve the data, but capacity is often lower, costs to maintain it are often higher. It also tends to be data that is more recent. And in some cases, durability may be lower than it would be in something like cold storage. And the last one, of course, hot, which was a difficult topic or concept for me to like rationalize here, is it tends to be only the most recent data. It tends to be ephemeral, like the most recent state of a device, for example, but often very quick to access, but lacking in durability. And again, all of these are tends to be not hard facts. There is no place I have found anywhere that has a standard industry definition for these terms. So quick examples of these, cold storage might be something like actually tape, offline storage, right? But since we're being relative, it might be just simply blobs in Azure. Warm storage might be something like Elasticsearch. Hot might be something like Redis. Okay, so that was all my framing material for getting to the scenarios. In our FabricCam story, we're saying that the FabricCam wants to store everything that comes through their system indefinitely. They have a goal of supporting analysis via HD Insight. They're concerned about cost because they're a startup. They want to make sure that the costs are reasonable. Durability is important because they want to make sure that they have captured everything, perhaps for auditing reasons. And this is an important point here, too. We've made the decision that storing an event twice is preferable to losing an event. And I wanted to specifically call that out because of some of the decisions we've made, that's an implicit assumption that shouldn't be implicit. It should be explicit. And that's something, too, that I am interested in advisors feedback on. So what did we actually do? So we have currently implemented a long-term storage solution three different ways. We use a stream analytics job, which is trivial to set up. It's very simple to set up. We've also implemented a .NET event processor in code that we wrote ourselves. And we've also implemented a storm topology. And for time's sake, I'm not going to go deep into these things because these are all assets that are in the GitHub repo that we would love feedback on. But I want to at least give you enough material to frame what you're doing or what you will see. So let me go to my browser. So the stream analytics job we have defined as part of a provisioning script. If you come to our repo and you go to IoT Journey Provisioning, we have a stream analytics job definition in JSON using the Azure Resource Manager or ARM templates. There's also an associated script here that you can run to actually provision that. And if you run your provision all script, it will set up everything for you and set up the stream analytics job. And then you can use that to start processing events from an event hub into blob. Now, some quick learnings there at a very high level. is it's very easy to do, but you don't have a lot of knobs to turn with that. So you're trading right ease of use for control over what you're actually doing. And that's still, there's a lot of features coming to this particular service. So it's something where it will be evolving and growing, getting richer as it goes on. And basically what it does is it takes everything that's coming through and it puts it into a single blob, everything that's going to your event hub. And we've also set up in our repo the ability to run a Hive query against an HD Insight cluster to see what Stream Analytics has put into your blobs. And there's a few other little gotchas and tidbits that we will be writing in the documentation for that. So the second implementation we have is in .NET. It's in the source folder implementation cold storage. That's using the NuGet package from the Service Bus team to implement an interface called the iEvent Processor. And what we're doing there is this is a scenario really where you want to have a lot of control over how you're doing these blobs. So what we're doing is we're actually monitoring the event stream, buffering in memory a set of events until we have something that's big enough to write out to the blob, because we want to write the blobs out efficiently. We also, by the way, as a brief aside, we have done some research and we're going to be posting some links to materials about the impact of blob size on your Hive queries. So it's important to have efficient blobs that are large enough, they're efficiently packed. We're also going to discuss some of the rationale we had behind how do we partition the data going into blobs. In the cold storage.NET code that we have, we actually partition things by the event hub partition to avoid contention between writing to a single blob across event hub partitions, and also by date. And I should also add the overall comment that we are we're working with JSON right now, as both the events coming in are coming in as JSON, and what we're writing to the event stream is JSON. And one of the key differences really between what we're doing with our .NET code versus the Stream Analytics job is that with the .NET code, we actually are able to add some of the metadata that's in the event properties to what we're packing into our blobs for Hive analysis, and we don't have that option yet with what we're doing in the Stream Analytics job. And we also have a lot more control over how big we make our blobs and what we're doing there. The final implementation that we have is in Java, using Storm and Trident, and a simple Storm topology that basically does the same thing that we've been describing there. I do want to point out that is in a different repo right now from our IoT Journey repo. It's in an MSPNP data-pipeline-storm repository. After we do some organizational work in the IoT Journey, we're going to bring this code over into our project. So all three of those implementations do the same kind of thing, but in different ways, and depending on what you're used to, one may be a better fit than the other. We are in the process right now of writing up kind of our analysis of what are the trade-offs between these different approaches, because there are, for example, there's different cost models. There's difference. I mean, there's like dollars spent on it. There's the time spent on managing things yourselves. There's also the control that you have or don't have, depending on which one you're using. We also are running this currently at somewhat of a low velocity. We're targeting about 2,000 events per second coming through our system. We're also very interested in bringing it up two orders of magnitude at least, to see how that impacts these solutions and their viability. Questions before I go on? I think we may have had some activity in the chat room.
Yeah, so Dennis was asking more about us illustrating examples of using Java in writing to storage, or possibly in writing to other storage mechanisms. I think you addressed some of it here at the end with the discussion on HD Insight. Dennis, did you want to ask anything else on the call?
Well, and I want to specifically ask you, are you talking about other storage technologies other than blob for long-term storage? And while we have silence, and you can be typing questions in, I'll say we have internally asked ourselves the question, what other technologies other than blobs may be appropriate here? And I think we may have written about this a little bit already in the cold storage journal entry. There's a pending pull request that I haven't reviewed yet around this. We've talked about, well, what, you know, you could in theory have your own Hadoop cluster running, and you could be writing this stuff directly to HDFS as opposed to going to blob storage. We also talked about alternative technologies such as DocumentDB or even Elasticsearch itself. We want to have that conversation. We have some thoughts on it. Most of it is research based right now, but if people have done something different, we would love to hear what they've done. We're gravitating toward blobs because of the cost, the durability, the integration with other technologies, and just it's very easy to maintain long term. Was there anything else in the chat room?
Nothing more from Dennis. Steros, did you have something to add? Okay, we'll move on.
One of the questions I would love to specifically ask too is this aligning with what either you're doing at your company or what you're seeing your customers do, what their needs are? We thought this would be a trivial problem, and we were surprised at some of the complexities that we found as we dove into this. I will move on to the next slide. Okay, so the other scenario we wanted to dive into was ad hoc query and exploration. And this came to us actually as a specific ask of the product group that's handling event hubs and IoT hub and so on and so forth. And the overall story here is really troubleshooting and incident analysis. Something has happened. There was, if you have a smart building scenario, let's say Fabricam had something unusual happened in an apartment building that they were monitoring. They want to know what was all the sensor data that occurred between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. last Tuesday night. Show that to me on a chart and let me understand what went on there. Especially temporal queries, was something that we think is a reasonable scenario that we expect people to do. So we wanted to set up our system so that we could query events by time and some metadata, such as, you know, basically what I just said, in room number 1244, what happened at between 7:30 and 8 p.m. We wanted to give the ability to view raw events, and I say raw in quote because we realized that no one's really going to care about, like, a single event. There's going to be so much data that'll be overwhelming, but the ability to slice and dice and drill in is really what it's about. And ultimately, this scenario for Fabricam needs to be human-friendly, right? It's if we put it in a storage mechanism that is not easily accessible, then it's not easily accessible, right? It needs to be. So that's how we're currently framing this particular business scenario. Again, we want validation that this is the right kind of thing and that we're not off in the weeds. Now, we have begun work on this. And some of the technical concerns that we came across is that since we're talking about raw data, throughput is really high. So whatever storage technology we use has to support a very high throughput. And that rules out some things that we've looked at so far. Like we think that SQL, for example, and DocumentDB and Power BI are not a good fit for this particular scenario because their limits for throughput is much lower than what we expect our limits to be. On the flip side, we expect that capacity here, overall long-term capacity, will be lower than it would be for long-term storage, right? And the reason for that is just simply that this ad hoc querying tends to be something you care about with relatively recent data. You don't need to keep everything forever in this way. In the scenarios that we've had described to us so far. So currently we have an implementation around this that where we wrote a custom .NET event processor to pump events into an Elasticsearch cluster on Azure. Now, why did we choose to do this as a .NET event processor? Really because we currently can't do it with Stream Analytics, so that wasn't an option for us. We could do it with a Storm topology as well, but it didn't seem to yield any additional insights to what we'd already done with cold storage. The actual implementation here, technology-wise, looks an awful lot like the implementation for the long-term storage. The real difference between these two scenarios from a technical implementation standpoint is just, where is the data going? Is it going to something that has long-term characteristics or something that supports ad hoc and querying? We do have, this is actually a private site that isn't publicly accessible, but we stood up an Elasticsearch cluster on Azure. We pumped some data into it. Just for people who aren't familiar with Elasticsearch, I wanted to give a very brief look into what that is. So here we have the Kibana dashboard, which is Elasticsearch's built-in dashboard.
It's an add-on, right?
Yeah, an add-on that ships with Elasticsearch. Right. And here we can see some events that have come in. I think we have somewhere around 4 million events that are represented over a couple of hours. We can actually hover over right and see how many events came in a 5-minute window. So here we had 416,000 in a 5-minute window. We can come in and look at the individual details of these events. There's a lot more complex querying and visualization analysis that could be done in a tool like this. And that's not something that we, on this particular guidance project, are going to dive into. We want to show people how to get your data into a tool like this. We're not going to dive deep into how to use this particular tool. But there's a lot of popularity, love out there right now for Elasticsearch. We wanted to at least demonstrate that that's possible. Going back to the scenario, one of my questions here really is, what sort of business scenarios are you seeing where that are similar to this? What are we missing scenario-wise? And also, are there other technologies that you think fit well here? Because one of the things we've learned with Elasticsearch is that it's not trivial to run a cluster, your own Elasticsearch cluster. It has a maintenance cost, a setup cost that's high. The user experience is great, but again, you know, there's a trade-off there. But we're not really sure what good competing technologies would be for this, and we would love to have input on what people are doing in that space. Any questions in the chat?
Yeah, Dennis brings up one, and it's dealing with the complexity of queries. You know, how complex do the queries get? And this is actually one of the discussion points we've had, you know, where hot, warm, and cold, where you don't know really the complexities in the future of the query itself.
Right, and how much of the information you want to join with is going to come from reference data or is going to be you know, reference data that's available during the string analytics or information that's just in your relational database that you're going to have to join to after the fact.
And, yeah. And you might end up doing another third-party database that might end up doing some more complex queries.
Yeah. And actually, so this is actually an ongoing conversation that we're having that we would love to have participation in. I think, I don't know what it is offhand, but I believe we have an issue in the issue tracker around this conversation point. And to reinforce what Matt said, you know, so you can do some pretty sophisticated things query-wise with a technology like Elasticsearch, but for the most part, your data is flat, right? It's difficult, in my current understanding at least, it's difficult to do like joins relations, if at all. And you often have to denormalize your data coming in. So one of the questions we're asking is like, okay, if I want to query my building ID, my event coming in from my device probably has a device ID on it, but not the metadata about the building. So now before I put it into Elasticsearch, do I annotate that event with the building ID before I put it into Elasticsearch so that I can query against it once it's in Elasticsearch? Whereas if I had that in a more traditional relational store, that would just be a join. Right.
And one of the things back at the beginning, we were talking about hot, warm, and cold. the differentiation between them is the ability to query that stream, because Hot is usually real-time streaming data, so you're not going to do very complex queries because you're more interested in getting the data as fast as possible, so you have more triggers. And warm, as Chris was saying, it's more normalized, so you can do it. And so the code storage is when we start thinking more in terms of far, far more complex queries on here.
I also just noticed some feedback in the chat from, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name. Do I say Michael?
Mitchell.
I see the question about, okay, I see Michael's question about ORC format.
That goes back to the last topic on whether we're writing the blobs as a line or not.
Yeah, so I the ORC has actually come up in our discussions previously. At the last time I looked at it, there was not a .NET story for ORC, which is one of the reasons I didn't go too deeply into it. I know there's good Java support for it. And another interesting question, because we also looked at things like Avro, right? And there's a whole lot of interesting problems there, and I don't know if ORC falls into this category. But appendability to blobs is kind of a difficult thing if you need to append data to an existing blob. And I think we had some concerns around ORC for blobs in that respect. But I would be really interested to know more about your specific customer's scenario, because I agree, something like JSON is actually not efficient storage-wise, right? There's a lot of fat on the bone there that could be cut. So, sorry, I know that's jumping back a little bit, but that caught my eye, and I'm interested. So Michael, I would love for you to, like, I don't know, send us some details or follow up as much as you're allowed to share about that scenario and what their needs are. One more question on that too. I would be very interested to know what type of data they're storing. Is it all homogenous, all the same schema, or are they mixing different shape events in the same storage? Thank you. So I guess going back now to the ad hoc and querying exploration, other thoughts, feedback on this? And specifically, is this a scenario that you see people talking about, that customers are asking for, that you're asking for? And you can also respond, like, later in the chat room or via email as well.
And I'd also be thinking about, like, not just is it a scenario you require, but what's the context? Like, is there a larger application that you're building that needs to hook into this for search or query ability? Are you going to use Kibana as a dashboard, as a front end, or are you going to be writing your own thing directly against Elasticsearch, if that's the route you go? Or is there some other piece to that we're missing altogether, where you're surfacing this information in real time to your customer and you're using a different technology?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Another interesting learning that we've had here too, right, goes back to the age-old principle of separation of concerns, right? What's great about a technology like Event Hubs is it allows multiple consumers of events to operate independently of each other. So one approach we have to these two scenarios we talked about is to have two independent event consumers running in isolation, one pumping to long-term storage, one pumping to something like Elasticsearch. If one fails, the other one is unaffected. But we also explored, for example, having a single stream analytics job that pumped to both. But then if one of those fails downstream, then the other one fails as well. So there's interesting questions there, because the trade-off goes back to cost and simplicity, but also technical considerations, like there are physical limits to how many things can be sucking data out of an event hub at one time. And we plan to write about some of that, but I just want to raise that while we're on the call on some of the questions we're looking at. So I want to make sure I leave some time. So let me briefly say, what are our very next steps? We have a lot of learnings that we need to finish documenting. We're honestly a little bit behind on that right now. We lots of notes, lots of things we need to put out there for you guys to give us feedback on. Another step that's really important to us is we are starting off really, again, with a low, reasonable load. We want to take the systems that we're building and increase that load first by an order of magnitude and then again by another order of magnitude. We also have started work on the real-time stream aggregation, scenario. You can see some code. There's a Streamlytics job that is in the repo around that. It's, without going too deep into it, it's doing some on-the-fly aggregation of temperatures, averaging across, I think, a five-minute window by building, and pumping that into a SQL database. That's something we've started. We think there's a need to go deeper into that, and also to really understand what are real business scenarios that drive that. Another place that we're currently really just beginning work on is the device provisioning story. We're currently exploring what technologies Microsoft has in that space, and we'll be talking more about that in the near future. So you will see some issues in the backlog reflecting that, and some pull requests around that. I do want to put out just a few questions, again, that can be answered offline or here if you want to. We have the simulator that we're using, Simulate Events. We didn't really think about this before, but we thought, you know, probably most people are building some type of simulator for load, if nothing else. But we're curious to know even what are your concerns there, right? We were looking at the simulator as just a way to support the rest of our story, but we're wondering if it should be part of the story itself. So if you are doing things where you're trying to simulate a larger load, number of devices, we're interested in simulating things like, hey, if we have 500,000 devices pumping events and we have 15 bad actors with malformed data, how does that impact our system? Or maybe even simulate scenarios like a DDoS scenario. We're interested in simulating that at some point in the future. I'm not promising anything right now. but we're curious to know if that's part of the systems and stories that you're concerned with, your customers are concerned with. We've also made some assumptions around the initial ingestion going through something like Event Hub. We know that there are other ways to do that. We want to know how much that matters to you. We have a placeholder in our docs where we want to talk about some other approaches we know could be taken. But everything that we're doing is centered around Event Hubs. We just want to know your thoughts around that. And last, one of the big questions we have is, you know, one of the key characteristics here is, what do your event streams look like? How much variety is in your event stream? And what I mean by that is, what are the schema, the shapes, the serialization formats that you're using to send data across? And also, at what velocity, right? We want to make sure that the numbers we're targeting are reasonable. We know there will be extreme cases, but we want to make sure that we're not shooting too low. Links to the resources, but let's also now take more questions, more feedback. Anything in the chat room?
Nothing else. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Olivier. I just joined the Azure IoT team, actually. I used to be in the MS Open Tech team, but how much do you guys know about what's going on? Because I will learn a lot about that in the next few days, but about the Azure IoT suite and the Azure IoT hub.
Yeah, we're in close communication with both, especially with the IoT hub. So what our current policy is right now, and this is, I think, fine to say publicly, is that until IoT Hub is in public preview, we are going to focus on technologies that are publicly available. We're talking that team to make sure that we're not going to recommend anything that doesn't make sense for when it becomes available. We are already planning on, we want to tell a story about when those services become available, about how to migrate anything that we've done to those services. So we envision several backlog items that are, hey, if you built this custom solution out yourself, well, you can migrate this way, and here's the things you might run into when you migrate. And then in the fall, or whenever everything becomes publicly available, we want to actually revise everything we're doing to use all those technologies.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, the main thing to emphasize there is is we wouldn't even begin to incorporate IoT Hub into our guidance until it was something that somebody looking at our guidance could get their hands on themselves.
Right. Right. Yeah. And and we can talk more about that too after the meeting if you're interested to know more about who we're talking to.
Well, I'm going to be a touch point in that team for that topic. So we'll definitely talk more. Yes.
All right. Other questions, feedback? All right. I really appreciate everyone's time. Again, please feel free to comment on the repo, open issues in the issue tracker, to participate in the Gitter chat room. All the links are really there off the main README in the repository. And again, we're really interested in your feedback and your constructive criticism. Thanks everyone for calling in.
Thank you.
Thanks.